Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Tonight on the show, an old friend from whom we haven't heard in a while, former Missouri Poet Laureate Walter Bargan, is going to be our guest. As the publisher of 18 books of poetry, and hopefully with more on the way, we're going to talk about poetry, about his time in the position of Poet Laureate of Missouri, but we're also going to just let Walter sit back and read us a few poems. We've got some of his, some favorites, some older ones and some newer ones, and then some of his favorites from other writers as well. A very enjoyable visit. Hope you'll stick around as we talk to Walter Bargan. Thinking Out Loud is next on KBIA. All right, it's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. Walter Bargan is our guest this week, the former Poet Laureate of the state of Missouri, I suppose the Poet Laureate Emeritus, if you want to be academic about it, of the state of Missouri, a wonderful poet and writer here in mid-Missouri. Walter, good to have you back with us. It's been a while.
It has been.
Good to see you again.
It's great to be here, Darren.
We appreciate you coming in. Let's start by just having you talk about what you've been up to lately. I know you retired, and you're getting to spend some time doing some other things now, I guess.
Well, I've been retired a little over a year now.
Okay.
And it's been quite an adjustment. And I don't know if I'm still fully adjusted to it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend in St. Louis who told me that it took him 3 years to finally become adjusted to retirement. And it's hard to understand that.
Yeah.
But I appreciate his comment much more than I would have before, because I was convinced I would be right there. I would be fully retired. And I would be doing all of these things, and I've ended up doing all of these things, but all of these other things.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's to be expected, I guess.
Sure, sure. And I know you've written some stuff lately. Talk a little bit about where that part of your life is right now as far as your writing.
Well, I have completed two manuscripts that are currently looking for publishers, and I have some hope that that at least one of them will find a home in the near future. One is titled Too Quick for the Living, and the other one is called Pole Dancing in the Nightclub of God. the first one, Too Quick for the Living, is rather elegiac. There are a number of poems in it that are addressing friends who are no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is a series of prose poems, which involve a lot of imagination and a lot of invention, and it's just out there on the edge.
I gave as a gift to a family member a copy of the book, The Gift, by Hafiz, who was a very old Persian poet, and the way I described it was that it was hot love poems to God. And I loved that idea. It's really fun to read, so I'm looking forward to pole dancing.
Actually, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I read a poem by William Stafford the other day, and I was surprised when I read it, because so often we think of Kabir, we think of Rumi, we think of Hafez as kind of ecstatic poets. And I remember someone in this country saying that one of the things that we have lost is that ecstatic joy in the society. Yeah. Well, let me read you a poem from Kabir.
Okay.
It is translated by Robert Bly. The small ruby everyone wants has fallen out on the road. Some think it is east of here, others west of us. Some say among primitive earth rocks, others in the deep waters. Kabir's instinct told him it was inside and what it was worth, and he wrapped it up carefully in his heart cloth. And so there you have that kind of mad, passionate poetry that you were talking about that's written to a higher being.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
I think a little bit of that is found in this poem by William Stafford called Maybe Alone on My Bike. I listen, and the mountain lakes hear snowflakes come on those winter wings. Only the owls are awake to see, their radar gaze and furred ears alert. In that stillness, a meaning shakes. And I have a thought. Maybe alone on my bike, quaintly on a cold evening pedaling home, think the splendor of our life. Its current unknown as those mountains, the scene no one sees. O citizens of our great amnesty, we might have died. We live. Marvels coast by, great veers and swoops of air so bright the lamps waver in tears, and I hear in the chain a chuckle I like to hear.
Great. Great stuff. It's different having one or several read to you, especially by somebody that does it well, and you do. And reading it yourself and having it go through your mind, isn't it?
Poetry, even though it appears on the page, and there are some poems that I think are better appreciated just read on the page, poetry remains an oral tradition, and it's written with that in mind.
Yeah.
And when you read a poem, when you see a poem on the page, It's the where the line breaks are, where the punctuation is in the poem. They're all giving you instructions on how to read the poem.
Almost so, like musical notes or staffs.
That's right. Yeah. It is a composition in words meant to be read with a kind of music. And the pauses are very critical in it for helping you not only create a rhythm that carries you through the poem, but also... It creates an understanding.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Walter Bargan, our guest, it's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. We were getting into discussion of your time as Poet Laureate of Missouri, and just briefly tell us the story about how that came to be, because as we said, you were the first one and sort of helped set up and establish that program.
In some ways, it came about wholly by accident. In some ways, it came about as a result of writing for 40 years. But there was a group, the Missouri Center for the Book, that had spent probably a decade trying to convince one administration after another to create the position of Poet Laureate. And finally, Governor Matt Blunt decided in the waning months of his administration that he wanted to do this, that he wanted to create the position of Poet Laureate. And this was contrary to his advisors, his handlers, who advised him not to do it. I think they were concerned that the position of Poet Laureate or whoever the person was in that position, there was just too much of a chance of some type of embarrassment happening.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, no, this is what I'm going to do. And so they rushed through the whole process. There was maybe 3 months of where they accepted nominations for the position. I think there were like 135 nominations. There were four finalists. I received a phone call to go down for an interview. I fully expected it to just be a hello, a handshake, and goodbye.
Yeah.
And it lasted 45 minutes. And it was a really very interesting interview because I was really taken aback by his very first comment. When he sat down, he said, "I've just finished rereading The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot for the third time."
How about that?
And I thought, oh, God, you know, where do I go with that? You know, and I immediately jumped into reciting a part of The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. And then I said, you know, T.S. Eliot is one of my favorite poets.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a really amiable time. It was a great interview, except for one point. And he said a number of times, remember this, this is not a political appointment.
Right.
And I really fully understood that. And I quoted, paraphrased W.B. Yeats, which turns out to be his favorite, Matt Blunt's favorite poet. Something to the effect, arguments with others turns to rhetoric. Arguments with yourself turns to poetry. And I said, yes, I understand, you know, what you're saying. Well, right at the very end of the interview, which had just gone fabulously,
mm-hmm.
The question comes, can you think of any reason why we shouldn't appoint you Poet Laureate? And I thought, oh my, I'm really having to think on my feet. You know, as I've said before, you know, I've lived in the Midwest so long. No, we all know that we're not perfect. So what have I done that isn't too egregious that keeps me in that position of not saying I can't think of anything?
I've never done anything. Yeah, that's a little hard to swallow for any of us, isn't it?
And so I'm actually at that point rather desperate, trying to come up with a reason. And I suddenly say, you know, I did use the word breasts in a poem. And mentally I'm going, duh, I'm in the governor's office and I'm using the word breasts. And so to dig my, and they chuckle.
I bet. That's great.
And I tried to dig myself out of that hole by saying, well, you know, I grew up in the 60s. And I felt like, oh my God, I just dug the hole deeper.
Yeah, that doesn't help necessarily. So you can get yourself in trouble with that one.
So we shook hands, said goodbye, and all the way home, I'm going, oh God, I blew it. Why did I say those things? And about 2 days later, I received a phone call saying that I would receive a fax. I had to sign it, and I can't remember if I mailed it in or I know I faxed it back. And it was a release to allow the highway patrol to do a criminal background check. And not only did I have to have a criminal background check, my wife had to have a criminal background check. Because, as I was told, any appointment that the governor makes is taken as seriously as a judicial appointment.
Sure.
And so I guess, their records didn't go back to the 1960s because I passed.
They didn't have the breast thing in there in the criminal report, I guess. So you got by with that
right,
one.
Okay. Yeah, I guess they didn't read my book.
Okay. Walter Bargan is our guest. You've had some years since you were in the position in an official capacity. Looking back now, what was valuable about the establishment of the position, first of all, and about what you were able to do during those years?
I think that it really surprised me. I really expected, I'd get a little... diploma?
A little something to put on the wall there.
A certificate.
Right.
I would frame it and put it on my wall, and that would be it. But I was overwhelmed with the attention that I received from the media, and I think in part that came because it was, the first time that there was a poet laureate in Missouri, because it was overwhelming for about 3 months. And although it's an exaggeration to say it, I really felt like every breath that I took and every word that I said was recorded or filmed or in print, in the newspapers and magazines, on the radio and television. I really tried to attend to everyone who requested my presence, because it seemed like one of the main activities of the poet laureate is to embody poetry. And that sounds maybe a little grandiose, but I think it's really helpful to people to see someone who presents poetry, and it helps them appreciate poetry and want to take poetry home with them.
I don't think of it as grandiose. I think of it as taking up a responsibility, right?
That's the way I saw it. It was my responsibility. And the most satisfying moments were when, for example, in an assisted living situation, an elderly man came up and said, I'm 82 years old and no one has ever introduced me to poetry, and that I have discovered is a great loss in my life. Or in a county library, in fact, this was Morgan County Library in Versailles, this man came up afterwards and he said, my wife dragged me to this. And I really didn't want to go. And, I really had a good time. I really enjoyed listening to you. And that's when I knew that I was, at least partially successful.
Walter Bargan is our guest, former poet laureate of the state of Missouri. We're going to visit more in just a bit, but I want to go ahead and give you a chance to read something else for us. I want to save some of the new things maybe for a little further on in the show. So if you've got just a favorite, so just pick a favorite that you'd like to share with us.
Well, how about if I read a poem that was written in response to the flood of 1993?
That seems appropriate with what we've got going on right now with our weather, so yeah.
This is called Why the World Stops, and this took place down in the Missouri River bottoms when Highway 63 was down to two lanes because two of the lanes were flooded, and yeah. A few days after this happened, all four lanes were flooded. And so this is why the world stops. We drop from saturated plains into the valley that is now all river, that is leveled by brown water and houses that are marked by the capsized keels of their roofs. The river is squeezed between towering damp limestone bluffs that are miles apart and shine in the sun of a rare rainless day. Soybean fields are rippled by fast currents. Islands of corn wade into a rising resignation. The four-lane is flooded down to two, a thin concrete ribbon that remains dry. For the moment, as it passes, house trailers floating off into their own unstable lives. The wood of a lumberyard drifts as if scattered by a careless child. Carp and catfish are the inmates left in the halls of the medium security prison. Pickups and tractors, driven to high ground in a rapture of abandonment, are now surrounded by a murky spectacle. Half the highway heads in a new direction, reported as washed away. No one is certain in this erasure of landscape, this going deeper, breaching levees and unburying the dead. And perhaps this draws the young woman to look too long in that other direction and swerves into the wrong lane, crashing head-on into an oncoming car. The quitting time traffic backs up 4 miles. Strangers shut off their engines and step out of their cars to stare at a clear sky, to watch a river that hasn't reached its crest but threatens to close these last two lanes, their way out of this stopped world.
Oh, that's terrific. And Walter Bargan is our guest, a poem he'd written about the flood of 93. We're not to that point, and hopefully won't get this year, but there's certainly some very vivid reminders there of what the scene was like back in 93. Walter Bargan, our guest, the former poet laureate of the state of Missouri. He's going to be in St. Louis toward the end of August doing a reading there. He has a website cleverly titled walterbargan.com, and you can check out what's happening with him there. What else have you got for us?
One of my most recent books is called Gone West.
Yeah.
And
yeah, tell us about Gone West.
It's also has a German title, Ganz im Westen. It is a bilingual book. That means that the poems appear in both English and German.
And you've done this before.
And I've done this before with Endearing Ruins, which
right.
is Lebenswerte Ruinen. And this, though, has 41 black and white photographs. The photographs are taken by Alan Berner, who graduated from the journalism school as a photojournalist, and he's worked for the Seattle Times for, I think, about 30 years now. This book came about as a result of reading an article in the New Yorker, and it was describing a festival in Germany called the Karl May Fest. And Karl May was a 19th century Western pulp fiction writer who wrote all of these stories that involved a couple of characters, one of whose name is Old Shatterhand and the other is Winnetou. And he wrote all of these stories, and he wrote them before he ever came to the United States. And when he came to the United States, he never made it past Buffalo, New York.
So he didn't go to Dodge City. He didn't see cowboys. There aren't a lot of cowboys running around Germany. But
it reflects his writing, and he remains an extraordinarily popular author. Mm-hmm. He may even be one of the best-selling authors in Europe, but especially in Germany. And in some years, up to 250,000 people attend this festival. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, that is really amazing. Can you imagine 250,000 people attending a festival dedicated to an author in this country?
Not especially, no. That many people, no. I don't think so.
I'd be surprised if you could get a couple of hundred people, you know. But then again, maybe a 1,000 people would show up for, Robert Bly, maybe.
Could be.
You know, who
could
knows?
Be.
Anyway, so I thought, well, maybe we could update a vision of what the West is like now. And so Alan, I knew, had this series of photographs that he'd taken of the West, and he gave them to me, and I wrote a poem to 40 of the photographs, and okay, that's what's happened in this book. And so this poem is called Surrounded. Years of negotiating while negotiating the years, and still no agreement. Either way, the years all head in one direction, for the door and down the street. Unless his eyes are closed and he finds himself growing up in this house again, long before the neighborhood turned to rentals, turned to realtors, turned into parking lots, he recalls the hours on his knees playing cowboys and Indians on the rug, circling the wagons, all the small plastic figures forever condemned to be in one pose, doing whatever it was they did, aiming a rifle, shooting an arrow, perfection, perfecting nothing else. How he learned the lesson to hold his ground, even as he is more alone than ever and encircled by stories of concrete.
Most of us have memories as kids of playing with these figures, so that's an image that one can definitely relate to and enjoy. Have you got one more for us?
Well, I was going to mention another surreal photograph in here is a football team on sod at the Four Corners area in Monument Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you have all of these buttes, which are extinct volcanic cores. And here is this football team dressed in white playing out in the middle of the desert.
With this background that we've seen in hundreds of Western movies over the years. You know,
yes,
the Duke is going to come riding by any second now. That's wonderful.
Okay, let me read you one more poem.
Oh, good.
And this is called In the Round, and this is in the State Capitol Rotunda. We sit in one, and I don't know if you've been in the rotunda, you probably have.
Yes.
You know, it's round.
Right.
It's circle upon circle upon circle going up, spiral, staircase.
Sure.
Yes, and it has such an exquisite sound in it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
And I was there because one of the things that was happening for a while is that there was a group called Verses and Voices, and they would hire a composer to put a poem to music,
okay,
a poem by a Missouri poet.
Yeah.
And they put a poem of mine to music called The Hall of Waters, which is on the next page after In the Round. We sit in one of many circles, each of us centered in his or her own widening circle, even as we stay focused, centered. Circumference is our measure, vertical, horizontal, oblique, tangential. Circularity spinning over, under, around us. We spin and are spun together in circles, concentricities we know and some we don't. Thoughts and desires circling a circular living, darkness to light, to dusty darkness. Within the roundness of these granite walls, the circling stairs and balconies rising upward to a domed climax, where the Roman goddess of harvest, motherly love, stands surveying the city on a bluff as it spirals outward, the river rippled round by a child's thrown stone. The long meandering freight of coal and corn following the circuitous bottoms. Bold in her sundown bronzed vestments, Ceres up from ancient roots, from the long story of our telling, namesake to the dwarf planet discovered between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter by Sicilian monk, January 1, 1801. Near Palermo. We harvest circles of light and time, energetic manners within the ever-expanding circumference of our curiosities. A celestial art, a music of the spheres, hearing goddess and dwarf planet, river and rotunda spiraling outward at once.
That was wonderful stuff. Well, I tell you what, we have unfortunately just about reached the end of our time, but we've enjoyed visiting a lot with Walter Bargan. Again, his website, walterbargan.com. You can keep track of what's going on there. He's got a couple of projects that hopefully we will see published again soon, and lots and lots and lots of books that have been published in the past that you can find out about as well. What else have you got?
I was going to say that there are three places in town that carry my books. One is Barnes & Noble, of course. The Peace Nook and Yellow Dog Books.
Okay, so you can stop by any of those places, Yellow Dog and Peace Nook, both here downtown, fairly close by. So if you're in the downtown area or on campus, it's an easy walk up there, and they're both fun places to go. Walter Bargan, our guest, and we thank you very much for your time today, sir. It's good to see you again.
Well, thank you, Darren. It's always a pleasure to sit and talk with you.
And that was our interview with former Missouri Poet Laureate Walter Bargan. Our thanks to Walter for joining us on the program this evening here on KBIA. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday evening for Thinking Out Loud. Trevor Harris hosts, and he will be remembering longtime Missourian columnist Rose Nolan. He'll talk with some friends of Rose's and with a woman who is keeping her legacy alive with the Rose M. Nolan African American History Library in Sedalia. We're also going to talk about the benefits of community gardening in another segment of Farm Your Yard with the Columbia Center for Urban Agriculture. That's next week on the program. Tune in Tuesday evening for Thinking Out Loud here on KBIA. And remember, you can follow Thinking Out Loud on social media. We have a Facebook page. You can keep up each week with what's going on the program. And you can also follow me on Twitter. It's KBIA Morning. Hope that we will see you there. And we hope you'll tune in again next Tuesday evening for another Thinking Out Loud here on KBIA. Till then, for this week's guest, Walter Bargan, and for our associate producer, Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.